Eating for your genes is now at another level of technology and application, and it's time to start the knowledge journey of how to apply it to your life. This episode unpacks topics that you've probably never heard of, like amyloids, oxalates, lectins, histamine, and sulfur. A true pain to purpose story is why Terry Cochran is on the show today, sharing the science about food that'll open your eyes. Terry Cochran is an international thought leader in longevity and a pioneer in personalized wellness, a mother of two, an entrepreneur, and some say a spiritual scientist. Terry has decades of clinical work with unprecedented clinical results that led her to develop the Cochrane Method, which examines the intersection of genetic tendencies, energy, and current state of health. A health crisis with her children led her to develop the Wilderterian Diet and accompanying book, The Wilderterian Diet. So my number one takeaway from the show, number one, the four big nutrition hijackers. Is your nutrition being stolen away from you? Dimensions of food that you've probably never paid attention to. What you'll also learn by the end of the show, number one, have we gone keto crazy? Terry thinks so. And number two, the 100 monkey syndrome and what that means to the food supply chain. This show is sponsored by FlexBeam, the best red light therapy device I've ever used. I use it almost every day on my body, joint pain, muscle recovery, and anything that is just really sore, even stomach pain or indigestion. The most valuable part about it, it's portable. Strap it on and it goes wherever you go. Check it out on my website, madetothrive.co.za, for a special discount. Send me your feedback and questions to either connect at madetothrive.co.za or on my WhatsApp direct line 064-871-0308. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Steve Stavs, Africa's probiotic and health futurist, and this is the Made to Thrive show. Hello, Made to Thrive Nation. Been waiting for this interview for a long time because you are going to hear things about amyloids, sulfur, phytic acid, lectins, histamine from a very, very special person who's got an incredible book called The Wilderterian. And I've done a quick quiz yesterday. And so I am a WS type, a low sulfur type. So we're going to be talking a lot about things that you've probably never heard of from Terry Cochran, who's absolutely an integrative practitioner, a nutritional counselor, incredible book. Incredible quiz and things that people would probably not have heard on this show after 199 episodes that have been released. I really want to have a warm welcome to Terry Cochran on the Made to Thrive show.
Oh, Steve, thank you for having me. And I love the name of your show because we were made to thrive.
Hey, so that's here. Absolutely right. So, Terry, let's give us a little bit of a backstory. Your book starts with just your own, you know, painful journey. And I want to squeeze every minute we can. So if you can just tell us your story in terms of how you changed your family's life with this Wilderterian diet.
Absolutely. Well, if you would have asked me 20 years ago, would I be talking to Steve on Made to Thrive podcast around epigenetics and precision wellness, I would have said, what? I'm an institutional risk manager. I tranche debt. I manage risk for billions of dollars in the multifamily arena. But sometimes life has this beautiful way of finding you in its purpose, even though you think you are already down one way, the life throws you a curveball, which would appear to be a curveball. And then you find yourself faced with a decision. What do I do with this curveball? Am I going to catch it or is it going to hit me square in the face? And so what happened with us is that my firstborn, he was born 6 weeks prematurely. And by the age of three, we were told to expect brain seizures, that he wouldn't grow past 5'4", that he had life-threatening asthma. He had body bleeding eczema. He wasn't walking or talking as a three-year-old. And we went down the allopathic route. And as I just shared, Steve, I live in the Metro DC area. So Georgetown, Children's, Hopkins, we could avail ourselves of all these top medical institutions. And all they said was it was idiopathic, meaning they didn't know why he was failing to thrive. He was having these issues. All they did was throw medicine and drugs at him, which only made him worse. And so because I am a Cuban refugee and my parents taught me to live in the solution, not to live in the problem and not to be a victim of your circumstances, I decided to deploy my risk management skills in institutional finance to the body. Now, I knew nothing of medicine. I knew nothing of nutrition. And this was almost 30 years ago, where there was no internet. So you couldn't ask Google or any other search engine what's going on. So I went to libraries, I went to bookstores, I researched families and children, and finally I figured out that, oh my gosh, the food we are feeding my son is literally poisoning him. Even though it's homemade, even though it's made with organic ingredients, it was poisoning him. And so he was my first and most important client. And then over the years, when people came into my office at Freddie Mac to talk risk, they wanted to talk about their kids or their family member. They didn't want to talk about the deal. And so then one day, it was something greater breathing through me that said, go back and quit your job. And so I did. And so now I've had this another 20-year journey, because I spent 20 years in that field, another 20-year journey of this beautiful evolution of developing a precision wellness model that intersects biochemistry, epigenetics, which is how environment influences our genes, quantum physics, and of course, nutrition.
Sounds exciting. In terms of just how you've had the ability to carry on learning and developing. And so to you, the Made to Thrive audience and the viewers on YouTube, we've got to follow Terry Cochrane. I've learned a lot already, and I've been in functional medicine 17 years. I've been a physician as a doctor of Chinese medicine 25 years. I've done over 140,000 treatments, lectured to over 12,000 medical professionals, and there is so much good stuff and new stuff in her book and her quiz. So you just got to stay tuned to hear about amyloids and these proteins. And I do want to start and give you a bit of a frame, Terry, because I think it's important. In terms of a story, a client of female and male, through the lens of fatigue and tiredness, having been a physician for so long, tiredness, exhaustion, just emotional burnout. People have no reserve these days. Give us a frame with regards to just your process of assessment with a male and a female, and the story of success that you've had with the sort of avatar of someone who's an executive or a mom or who has a lot on their plate and he's feeling a lot of these symptoms, has tried so many different practitioners and really hasn't had any success.
Absolutely. So we call ourselves the last stop saloon. So by the time people get to us, they have been to as many as 100 practitioners, and in some cases, spent over 7 figures out of pocket without any really true sustainable success. So what is the process that I undertake with each individual? And then I'll give you a male female avatar. So what we do is we ask a very intelligent questionnaire that when I ask you, does your urine smell like asparagus when you eat asparagus, that's a sulfur sensitivity. That goes to certain genetics that could be sulfur. Do you have trouble building muscle? That means you may not be breaking down protein. Do you have bumps on the back of your arms? Have you had acne? If you're a woman, do you have a history of heavy periods? That could be fat metabolism impairment. Have you had gallstones, kidney stones? Do you have thyroid goiters, or do you have any nodules? Do you have lipomas, neuromas? That's fat metabolism. And so we go to these big players of the big four, which is what I call the big four hijackers: protein malabsorption, which are amyloids, sulfur malabsorption, EOWS, IM2, fat malabsorption, and oxalate malabsorption, which has happened over the course of time with the deleterious actions to the way we grow our food and the way we live our stressful lives. So that's an intelligent questionnaire. Then we deploy an epigenetic analysis. Now, not every one of our clients has to have it, but we really encourage it because it's a story about you. It's your potentiality. Tell me what possible ways can I go in life and what are my vulnerabilities that I want to stay away from, right? So with the genetic analysis, I deploy the Cochrane method, which is my umbrella methodology that looks at what are your sharks and your minnows. The sharks are going to be those that have the most genetic variances that if that gene is expressed, uh-oh, right? And I not only look at them in isolation, but I look at them as a symphony. My methodology seeks to understand how do these genes play together and how do they layer over one another. So for example, sulfur overlays with histamine, oxalates overlay with fat, protein can overlay with fat as well. Protein can overlay with digestive capacity with the MTHFR gene expression, which means you're not having methyl donors, so it can overlay with methylation. And then we create this beautiful soup and we give you your answer. So let me share with you a woman who has came to me with Hashimoto's, that is an autoimmune thyroiditis. She is a Harvard executive. She travels globally. She has three children, one of them who was very autistic, one of them who was mildly autistic, and the third one was okay. So I started with her Hashimoto's. What we knew with her is she had massive fat metabolism issues. She wasn't breaking down fats. Why is that relevant? Because the thyroid hormone is fat soluble. If you can't break down fat, you can't avail yourself of the thyroid hormone. But what was very interesting is she had a re-expression of an IgG of the Epstein-Barr virus, which likes to hide in the thyroid, and clinical literature suggests that over 80% of Hashimoto's is linked to an Epstein-Barr reactivation. So what activates Epstein-Barr? Amyloids. So she was trying to eat chicken and broccoli, trying to lose weight, was super fatigued, was 20 pounds overweight. She was managing a very crunchy, as I call it, lifestyle because she had these children that needed her care and support, and she had an internationally rigorous job. And so what we did with her is we lowered her fat burden. We lowered her oxalate burden. She also had sulfur sensitivity. We lowered her sulfur sensitivity, and guess what? Her antibodies went away. Yeah. And she was no longer Hashimoto's, and now she's, you know, 20 pounds lighter. And along the way, we also helped her son out of autism.
Wow.
He's now totally mainstreamed. And I work with now three generations of her family. So we had to understand her underlying why. The stress response of her lifestyle had tripped her fat metabolism genes, not allowing her to break down hormones. The stress of her life had turned on this viral reactivation of Epstein-Barr, which was puppet mastering her thyroid. So even though she was on thyroid medication, it was actually making her worse. So we had to give her emulsifiers, like bile salts and beta TCP from Biotics Research that has lipase, that has betaine. We had to give her antimicrobials that were non-pharmaceutical, but would help manage the amyloid burden. But most importantly, we had to stop the feeder supply of the food. She was eating lots of nuts and seeds as a on the go, but nuts was way too fatty for her, right? She was taking estrogen because she was perimenopausal. That's the last thing she needed. She can't break down fats. She was on a thyroid hormone that was way too strong for her. She didn't need a hormone. She needed an antiviral.
Yeah.
She was eating all this broccoli because it's good for you and it's supposed to help your liver and it's supposed to be low in fat or, you know, low calorie. But the goitrogens, the sulfuric compounds of crucifers or goitrogens, so they further slow thyroid. And it was creating a sulfur malabsorption, which was then hitting her phase one liver detoxification, which was then further backing up her fats. So that's the woman. And I'm happy to take some inquiry from you on that.
Wow, that's incredible just to have a look at it from a genetic perspective and then put this questionnaire. Did you develop the questionnaire? Because I mean, I look at it, what I answered. I mean, it's funny. I never had a problem with garlic for so long. And then about 7 years ago, I can't tolerate garlic, cauliflower, broccoli. Never had a problem with it before. And I just put a caveat there. Haven't missed a single day's work, sick day in 25 years. So I've, you know, really watch my diet and my exercise and my mental and emotional health. But in the last few years, garlic, onions, cauliflower, broccoli has been a real problem, caused a lot of distension in that. So did you put this questionnaire together? Because I found it, you know, I've done a lot of, you know, studies in that, and I've never had a questionnaire to this degree that has been so specific with sulfur.
Yes, I did. And my client intake form, when you come to our practice, has a lot more questions.
Wow.
You know, we didn't want to give the people quiz fatigue.
Yeah.
Still give them enough data to orient them. Okay. But when I give you, when with my questionnaire, I believe my questionnaire, and I've seen thousands of individuals over my 20 years, I can get within about a 90% accuracy by the intelligence of the questionnaire.
Wow. And then you would overlap that with genetics. So like, I've got all the genetic tests. And so I've done a lot of genetics at the practice as well, sent thousands of tests for, you know, people to map out their genes. And then you would have a look at that. And then you would put the process of the questionnaire together with the genetics.
Yes. And then the last piece, which is I love, which is the quantum piece of it, is applied kinesiology, which is real-time body intelligence. And so that applied kinesiology is giving me feedback on what's happening with the body in this moment. And what it, where is it out of balance? And then with my biochemistry background, I take a look at my supplement apothecary, if you will, and say, what might this be helped with? And so we don't miss, because the body's going to say, well, even if you, so for example, if you have a sulfation pathway issue, B6 would be indicated by most clinical experts. However, if there's an over agitation and you're over methylating, and or if there's a myelin issue, that B6 is going to be too excitatory. So instead, we look at molybdenum, or we might even look at nothing related to sulfur. What we have to do is calm the body first. So we look at something for from an HPA axis, because sulfur, one of the genes for sulfur is CBS. I call it central broadcasting station, which can become agitated. That's why you, Steve, when you tripped with sulfur, your tummy got hurt. Why? There's so many neurons in our gut. There's more going on neurologically in our gut than there is in our brain. So when that turns on, it's going to hurt.
So what happened to this avatar? What did you do, and how are they now?
They're amazing. They're so happy. They're doing wonderfully. They're not on any thyroid medication. They've lost all their weight. Hashimoto's is a distance past, and she's thriving. She's thriving. She's a big megaphone for me.
Okay. Brilliant. Brilliant. Let's go to a male avatar. Maybe sort of just give you a little bit of a frame. Someone who's an exec, you know, working hard, training hard, supposedly eating quite clean, but feeling pretty exhausted, comes in, sees me, often like low testosterone, DHEA is low, just really struggling maybe with traditional, I put inverted commas, adrenal fatigue, just battling with energy, just feels really, really tired and pushing hard. How would you put that in? Obviously do the questionnaire, then the epigenetics. And then what do you traditionally find? I mean, obviously those four areas are important to understand and they're different, but what would you traditionally find in that sort of frame?
Yeah, well, I'll give you a real live case, an emergency room doctor okay, who works those shifts of super rigorous scheduling. He was adrenally fatigued. His neurotransmitters were way off because of his cycling of sleep and no sleep. He was on testosterone pellets, but could not raise his testosterone. He was that he had that middle belly fat. He was just around 40. He's not an old man, right? And his wife worked with me, and she convinced him to work with me. And again, what we found in his case is fat metabolism. And so he was estrogen dominant. Why was he estrogen dominant? Because he had underlying candida. And candida will increase estrogen. People think that men are that's not an issue for them. And estrogen and insulin and testosterone, they all work together. And when they're not working together, then T is going to fall. Insulin affects testosterone as well. So he was fat malabsorbed. He had candida. He was pushing a ton of cortisol and adrenaline because of his work. And I call them the dirty cupcake. It's a fat and a sugar. And adrenaline alone will turn on any pathogenic load in the gut. It also opens up the tight junctions, makes you fat malabsorbed. So I told him, you cannot take testosterone. Please talk to your doctor. You're too fat malabsorbed because of your stress response. He had methylation C677T, which is a genetic variance that recycles estrogen. He had the COMP gene, which recycles estrogen. Also for catechol, so how his neurotransmitters were, because candida also affects dopamine and serotonin. He was also depressed and anxious, right? So he had these certain genes, and I said, taking testosterone in a body that can't break down fats and is overladen with candida and is pushing adrenaline is actually counterintuitive. We doubled his testosterone by taking away the testosterone.
Sure.
Okay.
Wow.
But what did we have to do? We had to manage the candida. We had to manage his HPA axis. We had to bring down that epinephrine. We did it with taurine, with glycine, with rhodiola. I have a supplement called Stress Mover. I invented it. I invented it for my daughter, who was a pre-professional ballerina. And I have something called the ballerina syndrome, where they push epinephrine. They're asking so much of their bodies. A ballerina and emergency room doctor, they're very similar because they're on their feet for 8 hours a day, pushing a tremendous amount of adrenaline for performance. And I work with a lot of elite and really world famous athletes. So we really have to watch, whether you're an athlete or an entrepreneur or an emergency room doctor, if you are performing, If you're performance-based, you've got to make sure that that HPA axis, that hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, is under control, because the hierarchy of needs of the Cochrane method is you have to calm the body first. You have to calm that HPA axis, because if you're pushing those stress hormones, everything else is going to be so much harder to manage. So if you try to kill candida before you're managing that stress hormone, before you're opening up those detoxification pathways, it's going to take you 10 times as long. You may never get there. So this gentleman, he's a total, he's a rock star, and he's a total advocate of my work as a traditionally trained ER doctor.
Yeah.
Now, you know, he protein shames individuals. He's also a wildatarian. He takes my wildlights because that is an electrolyte balancer. He was really missing electrolytes, because when you're in a stress response, you're going to demineralize. You lose electrolytes through stress. So he's amazing now, really fit, super happy. And he decided to go telemedicine. He's decided, you know, but we solved his problem while he was still in the ER.
Sure. Amazing how you've looked at this HPA axis and how important the stress response is for healing. Because if you don't get the flames down, you can't rebuild the foundation, can you? Maybe you want to comment on, just having done labs for so long, this low testosterone in teenagers, you know, the drop of 45% free testosterone in the last 20 years. It's crazy. Has this got to do just with the wildatarian sort of process and frame? Because I've just never seen it. And in females, and people don't realize females have more testosterone in the body than estrogen by volume. So it's a crazy stat that's happening there. And when we do a lot of corporate work, they just don't have any conceptual understanding of how important testosterone is.
Testosterone is so important for brain function. It's so important for muscle structure. It's so important for reducing adipose tissue. We know that adipose tissue carries the toxic burden. Testosterone is important for the bone structure. And so we are seeing an epidemic of estrogen dominance because of our food supply, because of the pesticides and herbicides that get thrown into our water, the birth control pills that get thrown into our water. We're drinking estrogen. We're drinking estrogen. And then we have 90% of soy is genetically modified, at least in this country, which becomes a xenoestrogen. And we're consuming a tremendous amount of trans fats, which again break down the detoxification process of fats. And so when we're consuming a tremendous amount of sugar, where so many of these children are high in candida and or strep, which then will increase the estrogen burden and dislodge insulin. Why is that so important? Because it plays with testosterone. We know that if you've had strep in the past and you have a strep autoantibody, that is a fire starter for insulin dysregulation. When insulin is dysregulated, testosterone will be dysregulated. And we're seeing a lot of dyslexia in children, which is tied to an imbalanced relationship with testosterone and insulin.
Sure. Wow. Yeah, it's crazy. We're seeing it here and we're seeing it abroad. And, you know, South Africa, we had Stephanie Seneff on the show. South Africa is the number one user of glyphosate per head above the US. And so it's pretty crazy. But let's go, before we get onto my personal data, because I think it's important, let's use you as a professor teaching. And you're starting the 101 class on amyloids, histamine, lectins, phytic acid. Let's sort of give a frame there. We had Dr. Gundry on also talking about lectins on the show. So I think people just need to understand some terminology and why it's important.
Okay. So amyloids, what are amyloids? Well, there are two types of amyloids. There are endogenous, meaning they come from within, and then there are exogenous, coming from the environment. So our internal amyloid structure is an inflammatory response. So then the body goes, uh-oh, I need to counter the inflammation so I can come back to balance. Those are okay. But what's happened is, and this is the work of Seneff, and I know Stephanie, I love her work, that the crowding conditions of our animals, the torturing of our animals, the feeding of antibiotics and steroids and glyphosate through the crops that they're eating, has created in their tissue through the stress response, these truncated protein structures, meaning they're indigestible or much less digestible in the tissues of these animals. The most studied are chicken and beef, but we can see it in pork and turkey as well. Why chicken? Because they're the most crowded. They have the shortest lifespan, and we know that generationally now DNA transfer. So it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And so when we consume these amyloids that are indigestible, and especially if we have genetic vulnerabilities to protein malabsorption, me, I have the A1298C of the methylation gene, which makes me less likely to break down protein. And then you couple it with glyphosate, which becomes a glycine analog, which says you can't break down protein because we're stealing. Your body thinks it's making it a glycine, so it doesn't need it anymore. And that's important for hydrochloric acid, which is important for digestion and digestive capacity. So now you've got two hits, right, to protein. And so we eat this, and what does that do? Well, it has a deleterious cascade effect. One, the clinical literature and my anecdotal evidence through my practice, it turns on viruses. It turns on pathogens, but particular viruses, the DNA amyloid fragments, the viruses living within us take them, they're in our GI tract, and then they get reactivated. That's why Hashimoto's is through the roof. That's a reactivation of the Epstein-Barr virus. That's why MS is through the roof. That's a reactivation of varicella. Polycystic ovarian syndrome also has a varicella component. Bell's palsy, varicella component. Ulcerative colitis, varicella component. Heart disease, cytomegaly. Lung cancer, cytomegaly. These herpes family of viruses, I call them Rip Van Winkle being awakened because of the amyloid burden. Okay. So if we're not wild, if we are not consuming low amyloid burdened food, we're in trouble. And guess what? The spike protein also makes seven vectors of amyloid genesis.
Sure.
So now you've got the spike protein and you've got the food supply that are contributing to amyloid genesis in our body, which guess what amyloids do? They also create plaques in the brain and the spinal cord. We recently had a gentleman who had MS with spinal cord lesions and brain lesions, and he was paraplegic. He went to the top neurologist in our country. They got him to walk with a walker, 38 years old. We figured out he had a reactivation of the varicella virus in his spinal cord. He's completely, completely MS-free, not just symptomatically, but the lesions are gone.
Wow. Well done, Terry. That's incredible. That's an incredible story.
Thank you. And it's because he was creating a feeder system. He was eating the wrong foods for his genetic vulnerabilities, and the environment of the pandemic was creating this amyloid cascade. And he also had sulfur and oxalates and mold. So those are the, he had the big, I call it the whole enchilada. Mm. But when we untangled that web for him, he's now completely, completely well. He proselytizes this around the globe because he was only 38. His life was going to be changed for the rest of his life. And they told him 1 in 10 million that he might have this chance of improving, much less actually complete resolution.
My purpose is to inspire and empower people to superhuman health and performance so that they can thrive. But I need your help. I would so appreciate you rating the podcast and joining my community on LinkedIn and on Instagram. My handle is Steve Stavs and the links are in the show notes. This so helps me get the word out on how to live a thriving life. Thank you so much. Now back to the show.
So I'm going to stop on the amyloids because I think it's important. So basically you're saying industrial raised meats, proteins is something to be avoided, especially chicken. Is that correct? Especially chicken, because actually they've done testing on this industrial raised type of protein source to show that as a high amyloid content. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's in the literature. I put it on my Instagram page where I actually note the literature around it.
Mm. Now we've got suppliers in South Africa that we try and get not free range, but roaming free, not fed GMO feed out in these sort of, they move around in these mobile cages and they get let out and that. So have they been studied to show less amyloid than the industrial raised chickens?
They have not been studied. I have anecdotal evidence. And so I've taken Polyface Farms chicken, which is one of the cleanest here in the US. And I love Joel Salatin, less, but still indicative. And this is a hypothesis on my part, completely hypothesis. However, have you heard of the 100 monkey syndrome? No. This is a situation where in one part of the world, they taught one monkey a way to peel a sweet potato. Then the monkeys around them started peeling the sweet potatoes the same way. They found after there was 100 monkeys that was doing this, monkeys on the other side of the world started doing the same
thing. Wow.
So there may be some transference.
Okay.
That's going on. Because
so I had Joel Sederton on the podcast. So with his regenerative agriculture process and program, you think that's probably one of the cleanest ways to get protein in and avoid amyloids?
Absolutely. And coming from heritage breed birds that weren't already predisposed in any genetic sequencing to have that potentiality.
So what's the biggest thing if you've got sort of a predisposition not to break proteins down, you're not going to be able to build proteins, or you have proteins, you can't digest it, or you develop an immune response to those proteins? What are the traditional sort of diseases?
Oh, wow. Most autoimmune conditions are viral induced. MS, diabetes, mental health, protein wasting. We had somebody who had myasthenia gravis. That's a neurodegenerative disease. 19 years. She was 85 pounds, fed with a dropper.
Sure.
She, after 6 months, she was completely walking. After a year, she's completely well.
Wow.
That's 19 Incredible. Years. It was protein, viral, autonomic nervous system. There was trauma. We had to address the trauma as well. And that's the work of Lipton.
Yeah.
And I just had a conversation with yesterday. He's such a great teacher. So it's a big deal.
So like maybe you can help here, because I haven't found anyone on the podcast. I do a lot of amino acid testing, DBS, dry blood spot amino acid testing, and like this whole big thing on collagen and increasing your glycine and proline, and people are taking by the bucket loads, and then we see problems with low tyrosine, low lysine as well, low tryptophan. What do you think about this thing of just hammering out like collagen? And I've spoken about it on my Instagram channel that I just can't see how, you know, you can hammer collagen every single day. Now, it might work for some people. And, you know, Stephanie talks about taking glycine, and generally when I take glycine, really, it does help me. But I'm concerned about this, you know, part when I do all these amino acid testings and the major deficiencies in some of them, and then you've got glycine and proline like 3-4 times higher than it should be.
Exactly. So this is where my whole philosophy is living as nature intended. If we go too far afield in one direction, we're going to imbalance the other piece. And so what is the potential with collagen? One, it's high histamine. Histamine is going to turn on your sulfur sensitivity. Histamine is an excitatory neurotransmitter. It's going to set off the HPA axis. It's also high fat. So if you have these predispositions and you overdo, you're going to overdo it. And this is part of the way that I teach my client base is some things sometimes, not all things all the time, because the body is dynamic. I just, right before we aired, I have a gentleman who had COVID, had a total biofilm, had candida, had strep, had all these pathogenic loads. Guess what? It was in his teeth, right? And so he got the extractions. Now that's well, but what happened? He's feeling terrible because what? The mercury dumping went to his liver, and now he's super fat malabsorbed. So a guy who used to love salmon says he wants to throw up with salmon. I'm like, that's right, Kyle. You can't do fat right now. We have to bind and get the stuff out. He failed every protein, animal, wild or not, because his liver was so backed up right now from the aftermath of these extractions that in the moment, no fats and no animal products for him. And so good that he couldn't even tolerate charcoal. So, and this is through my applied kinesiology. So again, we totally shifted. I said, but this is a win with a comma, because what's happened is all your pathogens are now out, but your trash can's full and it doesn't have a way to recycle itself. So let's get it recycled. So we did PUTCA, we did apple pectin, we did phosphatidylcholine, because his myelin was also, he also turned on the varicella, which is having trigeminal nerve pain, which we know that the zoster likes to hide in the trigeminal nerve and then make ouchies. So this is the beauty of my method. And I feel like I'm just a vessel for this information. I don't take credit. I say I'm a good listener. I'm a pattern recognizer, but this is something greater breathing through me that has put this plan together, and I have the privilege of acting it out.
Sure. So just in this modern day world, I mean, does everybody present with candida and everybody's got these viruses? But then what happens is, due to your genetic predispositions and then obviously distress, you know, this sympathetically driven world that we live in, especially in the modern day cities, we then start triggering these, you know, these SNPs. And then we can bring alive a lot of these viruses and pathogens. It seems like it's that present almost there for every, you know, individual. It's just, are we triggering them to come alive?
Exactly. So there's a yes and there. You know, we're so far from living as nature intended, and we have a high technology world. So 5G alone, you know, we're sitting here talking across the pond, and we're doing it because of the benefit of technology, which is a great gift to our humanity. And we have to manage that risk of 5G. We have to manage the risk of this very, very fast-paced world we live in. And the pandemic has really shed light on a lot of bad things. But we also know that the spike protein makes oxalates, increases the oxalate burden. What does oxalate do? Increases the mold. What is candida? It's a fungal species. So we're creating vectors for these things to gain power.
Yeah.
Right. And so viruses and bacteria and strep autoantibodies, and I work with a lot of pandas, pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorder. And in most of these cases, it's a strep autoantibody, but it's also candida, and it's also a lot of viruses in the brain. Right. And so we just had a 7-year-old, we'd gotten out of pandas, and then all of a sudden they got sick, they got the flu, and he was acting pandas-like again. Well, why? Because the virus reactivated and his brain got inflamed.
Sure.
And so now it's the navigation, but they know why, and they know, now also know how to manage it, right? Because we've given him a lot of food back. We've taken him off of some supplements because he was doing so, so well. And this is, again, we cannot expect to take the same things all the time and get the same results.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so let's look at then sulfur. It looks like there's four main categories, but let's look at, so I'm a WS. Maybe you want to just explain what that is, low sulfur, and what are the symptoms, and then how you can manage that. I mean, I've got my genetics. I don't think we're going to have time in this podcast here. Sometimes it's really nice to work out my own sort of data with the person that I'm interviewing. But take us through sulfur, because I do want to get through lectins and histamine, because it's, you know, the lectin-free diet is something that, you know, it's been propagated by Dr. Gundry, that has been helpful for a lot of people. But there is a hierarchy of needs, is what I'm seeing more and more. And sometimes you've got to stop the major bleeding before you start looking at the minor bleeding. And that's crucially important. So maybe on that point, give us your hierarchy in terms of, you know, what you look at, and then looking at sulfur, which is my sort of predisposition.
Okay, so the hierarchy of needs is, what are your most foundational genetic vulnerabilities? We had somebody who had mast cell reactivation syndrome for 25 years. She's out in California. She can avail herself. She has the facility to avail herself of the top doctors across the country and beyond. We looked at her genes. She had 56 variances in sulfur and 35 variances in histamine. She was eating high sulfur foods because she was eating low FODMAP. Right. And so sulfur was the key to unlocking her mast cell reactivation syndrome. She's doing so much better. Mm. So why is sulfur such a culprit? And I give Stephanie Seneff all the credit for saying, calling it out on the freaking glyphosate. So I have genetic vulnerabilities for sulfur. My daughter as well, very high sulfur, very high histamine. But my first book, which was written over a decade ago, I was pro-sulfur because it's anti-carcinogen. It's a phase one liver detoxification inducer. It's a liver detoxifier until it wasn't. Why? Just like you, Steve, why could you eat these until you couldn't?
Tell me, please.
Glyphosate. Glyphosate interrupted sulfur's ability to convert to sulfate, which is actually what we need to build our mucin layer of our digestive tract, to manage our neurotransmitters, to build our nice little tendons and joints. 73% of rheumatoid arthritis has a sulfur sensitivity, 73%. So if you're not only the food, but if you're taking N-acetylcysteine, which is sulfur-based, if you're taking MSM, oh my gosh, if you're taking glutathione, if you're taking a garlic supplement, okay? Because it's not just the food, the well-intentioned functional community said, let's take all these herbs and spices and minerals and make them be our rescuers. Well, maybe they could be poison as well. We had a woman who had such severe psoriasis. She was a New York socialite. Her uncle sat on the board of the Mayo Clinic. So she had access to everyone. She literally, Steve, was deformed. She literally looked like a tree trunk. She was being given glutathione IVs regularly. Within 8 weeks, she looked like herself again. We had to take away anything that was sulfur and histamine based.
So what are the big ones there? Just repeat that, Terry, for sulfur and histamine based. Do they often go together, sulfur and histamine?
They do, because they cross intersect at the CYP450 family of genes. And the CYP umbrella, which is the phase one liver detoxification, there's a cross section. So I call it a layered cake. So from a supplement perspective, glutathione, N-acetylcysteine, okay, garlic. All right. We have MSM. We have methionine as well. They're all sulfur compounds. Taurine can be helpful, but in small amounts because it's also sulfur. And I belong to a mastermind in the longevity space. I'm one of their advisors, one of their medical advisors, although I'm not a doctor, but I'm one of their medical advisors. And we have the best in the space coming in and talking about the greatest things. And they were really espousing high doses of taurine. And I'm sitting there in the audience going, time out. The glyphosate has interrupted sulfur processing, and this could be potentially very dangerous.
Very well done to you. You know, I'm just thinking about so many cases, you know, when you learn a lot of stuff and just reading your book and that you don't realize the degree, you know, using taurine and myo-inositol and theanine in one of our, you know, formulas that we use for sleep. Helpful, but some people that just now take more of that because, hey, hang on, more is better. Then all of a sudden they wake up and they wake up inflamed and, you know, they wake up jointy. And I'm like, no, this is not possible. And there's the taurine just probably hitting a little bit of just too much while they're sleeping. Then they wake up and then they feel like all inflamed in there. It's absolutely fascinating.
That's right. So those are the big sulfur.
And what do you do now? What supplements would you take or what foods would you try and do to make sure if you sort of sulfur predisposed?
Yeah. So if you're sulfur predisposed, you got to stay away from the cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, arugula, bok choy. I call it killer kale because it also intersects with oxalates. Cauliflower, broccoli. There is a big green drink that is doing so well in the marketplace. And I believe it has so many ingredients, especially in the pandemic, that are counter to our well-being. And I see it expressed in my clinical practice a lot. So please read your food labels, understand your genetic vulnerabilities, listen to your body.
Yeah.
All of the above. So cruciferous vegetables, garlic, onion, egg yolk. Now, the hierarchy of needs with egg yolk is if you have a super need for choline and if you have a PEMT polymorphism and it's in your red zone, as I call it, then that need for choline may supersede the fact that you have a sulfur sensitivity. And so you might be able to do eggs over easy, over medium, poached, but the harder they get, the higher the sulfur.
Sure. So again, the harder they get, the higher the sulfur. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And also what I noticed is traditional eggs, I used to get a lot of problems growing up, a lot of gas, distension, you know, flatulence. Then I only started eating like really, you know, pasture-raised, pasture-fed chickens and eggs, and I'm significantly better. But I didn't realize the way you cooked it made a big difference.
It does. It does. Everything matters. You know, it's that my approach is extremely granular, but I teach my clients how to be so body intelligent that I say I graduate my clients. I don't want you to need me forever.
Yeah. Well done. Right?
That's not my goal.
What about eggplant and that seems to cause a lot of problems in my
has high histamine. So what are high histamine foods? So what has happened to histamine? And let me just back up for a moment. Another thing with the darn spike protein, it turns on the histamine receptor gene, HRH1. It's in the clinical literature. Oh boy. So now we have all these people with idiopathic anxiety disorder and it's a freaking histamine response. Or we have somebody turning type 1 diabetic after having a hemoglobin A1C of 5.2 and they're diabetic. Oh my gosh, it was histamine. I have a client who was diabetic for 20 years. He's in the wellness space. And we have stopped him from having to use insulin because we are using antihistamines. And I had the privilege again of speaking with Dr. Lipton yesterday, and we were talking about histamine. He's like, you're right, Terry. Histamine's tied to diabetes. Histamine's tied to heart attacks. People don't know about this. And so we were talking about our, you know, we were like rawing each other saying, yeah, very few people in the space understand this. And especially in the space of the pandemic. And so healthy foods like avocado, banana, eggplant, anything fermented or sprouted, yogurt, right? So if you're trying to be, I'm trying to get probiotics or high histamine. And so if you're trying to be, okay, I'm going to be that biohacker and I'm going to sprout my grains and I'm going to do sourdough and I'm going to eat pickles and I'm going to eat kombucha and kimchi. And oh my God, you could be literally creating hell in your body and creating anxiety, creating a heart attack, diabetes, idiopathic anxiety disorder, ulcerative colitis, mental health issues. The histamine goes on and on. Heart disease. You could have, I've had somebody with a high histamine load post-COVID heart rate, professional ballerina, heart rate went to 200. Wow. Her resting heart rate usually was in the 50s. Idiopathic anxiety out of nowhere, panic attacks.
Oh, wow. So, you know, looking at your quick tests online, that'll pick up, you know, if you're a histamine sort of responder. And then genetically, what do you see genetically in terms of histamine?
So the genetically is the HRH1, HRH2, HRH3, 4, 5, 6. We also look at the CYP4 family of genes, the CYP2D6 gene, the CYP1A2, the CYP34A, I believe. So the CYP family of genes intersects with histamine. And if you have a lot of sulfation pathway genes, because they also, that's why I look at genes so comprehensively. The CBS gene, the SUOX gene, the BH4 gene, the salt genes.
That's profound. Okay, so we've looked now at amyloids, sulfa, and histamine to that degree. And then next, where would you go, Terry?
I say oxalates. Lectins, I call them like number 7 on my list. And that's more of a, if you manage the big stuff, the little stuff doesn't matter because it goes away.
Okay.
So why are oxalates so profound? Once again, the elucidative work of Dr. Stephanie Seneff. Hi, Stephanie. she had elucidated that glyphosate had a disruptive effect on our oxalobacter bacteria in our gut. Why is that so important? Because all these massive foods that are so good for us, berries, spinach, almonds, black beans, they have protective coating of oxalates to keep them from predators. But we used to have the gut microbiome to say, okay, we're going to dismantle you and we're going to extract all the amazing other phytonutrients from these great foods. Well, guess what? That's not there anymore. And another little dirty secret, the spike protein makes oxalates with the calcium channels. So now we're having a higher oxalate burden. And guess what? Oxalates breed, help aspergillus, which is mold. So mold and oxalates play together. So now if you have candida, you're going to have, you see a lot of PANDAS or OCD. If you look at an organic acid test, their arabinose will be elevated and so will their oxalic acid. They run in parallel. And so that's a big deal. Why? Because it's tied directly to heart disease. It's tied directly to building amyloids again, because guess what? Amyloids and oxalate, they feed one another. And so atherosclerosis, stroke, pulmonary embolisms, cysts, not direct corollary to cancer, but you build stuff, kidney stones. We're having women having these massive cysts in their breast, in their reproductive organs. I recently had a 23-year-old who had a full hysterectomy. She built cysts the size of her head. Full hysterectomy at 23. That is never in my lifetime. I'd never heard of that. And so we're seeing more and more disruption, especially in the reproductive areas. Prostate cancer. We're seeing a lot of this. It's not just it's happening like this. It's this curve.
Wow. Wow. So that's all right. So then let's move on to, is it lectins and phytic acid next, or where do you go? We've now, just to summarize, it's amyloids, then sulfur, then oxalates.
Yes. I would say that the phytic acid is important, and it does leach minerals, but again, not all are created equal. If you look at lectins, which is all legumes, not all legumes are created equal. Again, back to the hierarchy of needs. If you don't have an oxalate burden and you have a really big need for molybdenum, black beans are amazing. If you don't have a histamine response and you have a really high need for molybdenum, chickpeas are amazing. Right. So if you have a really big need for phosphorus, kidney beans are amazing. I just recently worked with a gentleman who has a lot of mental health issues. His stools were green. He was messy. He said, "Terry, I physically feel mentally brighter when I eat kidney beans." I said, "That's because they're so high in phosphorus." So the body extracts what it needs and that says, "Okay, I'm going to deal with that later." And so again, that's why I feel like when anybody asks me, "Terry, is this good for me?" And I'm like, "Well, it depends who you are, how you are, and why you are right now." Because if you're having a high candida, stay away from those black beans. But if your candida is under management and you're having a sulfur situation, eat black beans, but not forever, to get that, to extract that molybdenum. And so this is why we're equal opportunity. And we teach people how to navigate what's on their plate, what's in their supplement containers, what's on their pharmaceutical shelves too, right? So sulfa, if you have a sulfa allergy, you should not be eating any sulfur-based foods, clearly.
Yeah.
So it really is, I'm not an expert in lectins and phytates, but I do know that some of them can be beneficial. Some of them can be very nutrient depleting. They're like sponges, right, of absorption. I leave that to Gundry, but I will say that, again, when you hit the big rocks, it's sort of like taking away something. If you're only taking away a pebble at a time, it's going to take you forever. Right? If you're hitting a big rock, all of a sudden the water flows again.
Yeah. Maybe let's sort of go on to fat malabsorption, because a lot of people are on low carb, and, you know, we had Professor Tim Noakes on the show twice, and just looking at the keto diet, and for some people that's going to cause a lot of problems according to your frame. I've seen it as well in the practice. Some people just cannot absorb and cannot break down fat at all, which causes issues. So maybe you want to just expand on, you know, that problem that seems to be quite pernicious in like females. I see it more than males, but maybe you can sort of just let us know your view in terms of the Cochrane method.
Thank you, Steve, because I do believe that's the, you know, the rounding out the big four plus one histamine, the big five. So fat metabolism has become a really big deal. Why? Because we're low chronic stress releasers, right? It's a chronic drip of stress. Stress, again, I call the dirty cupcake. It is a fat and a sugar. Epinephrine is a fat. Epinephrine will open up the tight junctions of your gut, making you fat malabsorbed. Epinephrine will dislodge other hormones. And if you have methylation issues, which 1 in 3 Americans do, and if you have the methylation C677T polymorphism, you do not break down fats very well. If you have a bile acid transfer issue, you're not making the bile synthesis to break down fats. And we're very fat centric. Keto, I say many times, keto can kick your butt. Right? And even me who loves fat, I know when I've overfatted myself. All I have to do is look at my stool. What is the color of my stool? Did it change color? Oh my gosh, I'm lucky to have beautiful skin, but if I have a little pop-up, that's too much fat in my system, right? So what's happened is we've gone keto crazy. It's not for everyone. It dislodges hormones. It creates a rebound effect. It eventually affects the kidneys, clearly affects the liver. And then if you're in a keto craze and you're also doing hormone therapy, watch out. You've hit your tipping point of your body's ability to break down fats. Why is that so important? Almost 70% of our brain is made up of fat. Our collagen structure is made up of fat. Our ligaments, our tendons, our capillary structure. Our capillary structure is made up of fat. We need to be able to break down fat so we don't have a heart attack, because they're all tubes. Our digestive tract is a big tube. It's made up of fat. We need to be able to assimilate those fats so our body can vascularize, so our body can digest, so our body can think, and so our body can be reproductive as well. Infertility, what I'm seeing is way through the roof, and so is miscarriage. Why? Because we have an imbalance in the way that we manage fats. What are fats? Hormones are fat soluble. Neural hormones, which are our neurotransmitters, are fat soluble. They have to cross the blood-brain barrier. We need to be able to assimilate those fats, unpack them into the smallest tiny components. Back to the principles of Dr. Bruce Lipton, whom I adore. What is the brain of the cell? It's the freaking cell membrane. So what is the cell membrane made up? It's made of phospholipids, of the lipids that we have not just eaten, but we have assimilated. This is very important for your audience. It's not just what we eat. It's what we assimilate. So if we're eating a bunch of fat and we're not breaking it down, that cell membrane is going to become brittle. And that means you're going to be more likely to have a DNA impact. That cell danger response is going to be on high alert, and it doesn't have a way to protect itself. The last 90 days of the fats we have consumed and assimilated is making up our cell membrane. So the cell membrane should be like a big balloon, should be buoyant. It bounces off what shouldn't be coming in, and it lets in what should be coming in. Insulin, my gosh, diabetes insulin. I talked about insulin today on my Instagram post, where I talk about, look, insulin, folks, is a really big deal. It's linked to Alzheimer's, dementia, heart attack, the five big killers in our country. And obesity is creating a big problem, right, with insulin disruption. Mm. But we're carrying fat in our midsection, which creates for heart attack, right? The bigger the girth, the more likelihood you're going to have a heart attack event. So fat is a really big deal. And I really counsel women with bioidentical hormones. I have a woman who I just saw this morning. She's a CEO of a very large biohacking firm. She's like, what do you think about bioidentical, Terry? I said, if you do that, you're going to have to come and say, rescue me again, because you can genetically not break down fats. The second half of your cycle, you go cray cray if you're eating fats. If you're taking any kind of fat at all dietarily, so imagine what you would do if you took a hormone.
Yeah.
Right? So we have to assimilate and break it down. I'm just really on my soapbox about women and hormones, because so many women take very big hormones, and then down the road, what they've got, they've got aberrant cells, because they actually hurt their cell membrane, not help.
Sure. And just on the cell membrane, you know, having done so many tests on the, you know, EPA, DHA, the omega-3 index, you know, having Bill Harris on my show, just looking at what's happening at just the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3, what's your view there if we put that with regards to the filter of the Wilderterian diet?
So not all omega-6s are bad. It's the oxidized omega-6. It's the seed oils. I love conjugated linoleic acid from lamb. It is great brain food. Mm. Saturated fats of butyric acid of butter, great brain food. So we can't just, again, we can't paint everything with a broad brush. Understand the quality of your omega-6, right? Phosphatidylcholine made from potentially omega-6s, but if they're cold pressed, if they're the right source, it could be very beneficial. But corn oil in no capacity will be beneficial. Peanut oil in no capacity. Soy oil in no capacity. So it's really understanding that. And the reason why the omega-6 to the omega-3 ratio has gotten so out of whack is that any packaged food is going to be that oxidated lipid of the omega-6. It's oxidated. It's been fried. It's become a trans fat from a cis fat. Cis fat is good. Trans fat is bad. And so we have, again, gotten away from living as nature intended, adulterated these fats, and we're paying for it.
Sure. Terry Cochran, you have upgraded my life, and I've got to spend more time listening and hearing, which I have. I've listened to your podcast. We'll put the links to Dave Asprey with Terry Cochran, Ben Greenfield, who's become a friend and who's been on the show as well. So, Terry, just want to declare favor and blessing over you, that you would rise up with much courage in your calling. You're a beacon of light. You've got analytical thought. You recognize patterns. You've gone from pain to purpose. And so just want to celebrate you. I want to salute you. As I sit here, I've just got goosies all over, because I know that this is going to be just a start of a friendship. And I think we'd love to have you in South Africa. If you're ever going to travel, you've got a place here. And hopefully we can chat offline again. But where can people sort of connect with you and find you and sort of do a deeper dive into your work, Terry?
Absolutely. Well, we're all over social media. My Instagram, Terry Conquer Beyond Nutrition. I have terrycochran.com, which is where my clinical practice lives, and a lot of blogs, the Global Sustainable Health Institute, how I help advise and teach. So on Facebook, so we're everywhere. And then the Wildatarian Diet, Living as Nature Intended, you can find that on Amazon. Our clinical practice is way full. We have a multiple month waiting list. If you want to work with me, be patient, very patient. But we do expect to teach this. This is my challenge and my goal for 2024 and 2025 is to get this out there. This can be taught and it's necessary.
Absolutely, Terry. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Made to Thrive show. New episodes are released weekly and are published exclusively on the Made to Thrive podcast link. If you're interested in receiving more thriving insights, as well as receiving other exclusive member benefits, visit madetothrive.co.za/subscribe. This podcast is for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of healthcare professionals for any such conditions.